So here we are. Greetings to all. This is Joseph J. Alexander coming to you from the Full Circle Radio Network. I wasn't planning on doing a White Heat Redux on a single episode of television. But apparently, because everyone seemed to want to put this out as a major event and wanted it treated as a major event, and with everything surrounding it, looks like I just had to record something on it. Not exactly thrilled. But there's levels and there's reasons to why I decided to do this. So let's just I'm at a loss for words. I really am. But we have to do what we have to do. And talk about it. So, AEW Big Business was the episode of Dynamite that took place this past Wednesday. I actually would have recorded this sooner, but the weather's been nice, and I've actually been able to take the bike out on a couple of cruises, so I figured I might as well enjoy life while I can, because I've got to deal with this kind of nonsense. So, the entire premise of this episode leading in was that Mercedes Moné was going to be debuting for AEW. It was the worst kept secret in the wrestling business. But the problem is, it was still treated as a secret. Things may have turned out quite better had you actually advertised her for the event, because it's not like it was inked that morning. She shot commercials for it. As you saw during the first commercial break, she's in the new bumpers. You put all your eggs in this basket thinking you were going to catch that lightning in a bottle that you did for that very brief early CM Punk run. And that didn't happen. And I am not going to blame Mercedes. Mercedes is a wonderful girl. To put all of this on her shoulders is just the wrong approach. But we'll get to it. So I want to start off before we even hit 8 p.m. on Wednesday. We need to talk about inflated numbers of the gate. It has become a major issue with AEW, and it is literally being done to placate Tony Khan's ego. For those who don't understand or aren't sure what I'm talking about, for those of you who may be newer listeners, it has been proven by numerous people in various cities across the United States that on Wednesdays and Saturdays, the morning and mid-afternoon of the TV taping, there are people that are sent out on behalf of AEW who hand out anywhere from 500 to 1,000 or more comp tickets in the surrounding area. There's an issue with that. The first issue is obviously what happens is those they then go back and say, oh, well, we distributed this many comps, so then we need to add that to the number of tickets distributed. That gives a false number as to the actual attendance. This is something that we've been seeing is a trend with AEW, and that's a problem. But it gets worse than that. And I actually had this debate with a couple of idiots online who don't seem to see the issue with it, because they're like, well, what's the issue with that? Here's the issue. For weeks, the tickets that were on sale for this show were an upwards, some of them were an upwards of $500-$600. And then they're lowering the ticket prices as they're getting closer to the show because they're not filling it, which is the opposite. You're supposed to start at a mid-range, and then as there's a demand, you raise the price. That's how that works. Or you just leave the prices as they are. The second is, how much of a slap in the face is it to people who bought tickets during the pre-sale, who paid out the nose for them, and walk up and are standing outside a couple hours early waiting for the doors to open, and there's 10 people walking up that got handed tickets because they work in the general area of the arena? How fair is that? It's not like radio stations giving out a family of four pack of tickets to this, that, and the other thing. When you are dealing with that bulk of tickets, especially for a company that has been averaging 3,000 people per show, and you're giving out 1,000 tickets, that's a third. That's a lot. This is the other problem, though, is they give out these comps, but they don't open up more sections for them. See, here's the actual numbers that were brought forth by WrestleTix. This was 2 hours before gates opened. Current setup was for 8,248. Tickets distributed at that time before the final bit came in was 7,779, with 469 seats available. Then all of a sudden, Dave Meltzer started claiming that 9,400 tickets had been sold. Not distributed, sold. That's what the fucker said. So there's a disconnect, because if they're only set up for 8,200, how did they sell 9,400? Here's the other problem with it, is because they hand out these comps, they don't open up the extra sections. It's basically the comps are first come, first serve. That's what they are. It's show up with a comp, and if there's seats available, you get into a section. I mean, they obviously open up like a couple of like obstructed view or whatever, but they don't match the number distributed to the number there. So people are like, oh yeah, the bubble, they sold out. That's the other problem. They didn't fucking sell out. Even at 9,400, if that number was real, if there were 9,400 people there, which there weren't, TD Garden holds over 19,000. People say, well, not for wrestling. WrestleMania 14 was in that building and did 19,000. Survivor Series was there and did 16,000. The last SmackDown that was there did 12,000. The last Raw that was there did 13,000. So they were nowhere near a sellout. Nowhere near. And then what happens is reputable sources like WrestleTix are trying to give the actual scoop, and instead people want to believe Meltzer instead. And WrestleTix has to release statements like this, saying multiple sources have confirmed that AEW Big Business has distributed 9,400 tickets for tonight. This would mean that any section I've partially credited, including several upper decks and sections in the hard cam side, would be fully distributed. As a general rule, If I don't see a section fully open, I only credit it for the amount I observe until the final count, where I can access its occupancy and you can assist from picture and with assistance from people's pictures. I've also seen the reported gate number, which when calculated implies how much lower than usual average ticket price. This in turn suggests that complimentary tickets comps were likely distributed in the sections I had previously partially credited. I'm hopeful pictures will help answer any questions I have about the originally partially observed sections on the hard cam side and upper tiers. If you're attending tonight's show, please reply below with DM pictures, yada yada. And that's where the problem lies, because when pictures came out, there was still a giant empty section on hard cam side, and the entire upper bowl was empty. So that means that they drew 8,000. That most of those comps that were given out were not acted upon. Because that's what happens a lot of time. They distribute these comps, but people don't show up. The last couple of times they were at Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut here, they would have people out in the mall, in the Uncasville Mall, handing out comps. And almost none of those people showed up to the show, because when it was showtime, the arena was still three quarters empty. So just because you hand out the comps doesn't mean people come. But at the same time, like, why should anyone bother paying for tickets if they know, well, if I just hang out in this area the day of the show, I'm going to find comps? It's a bad business practice. Plain and simple, it is a bad business practice. They should have called the show Bad Business, not Big Business. So that's everything that's happening before we even start the show. Before we've even started the show. What's wrong, Titus? My puppy's upset. Sorry, buddy. So then we get to the actual show. So we get, of course, we get the Big Bang Theory lead in, which goes till 8:01 or 8:02 every fucking time. And it's become a running joke, but it's true. Like, when the rerun of a sitcom before your show is doing better numbers than you, it's a bad sign. And of course, I've had someone say, not in the demo. Shut the fuck up with the demo shit. No one cares about the demo. You know why? Because if the demo were that important, there is a counterpart to the demo, and that is the ad space that is shown during the show. And I'll explain that a little later. So we open the show, and here's new music. And right off the bat, here comes Mercedes with this new, really annoying music that has CEO chants in it. This is something that AEW is getting really stupid with, and that's including chants in people's entrance music. They're doing it for Banks,
Monet.
They're doing it for Ospreay. It's annoying. You are trying to force a Pavlovian discourse. That's not organic. Like, as much as I fucking hate Cody Rhodes, everyone yelling the whoa during his entrance music is organic. Seth Rollins' entrance music. Those woes were done by the crowd first, and then they added them into the entrance music afterwards because it was organic. When you're just throwing in chants, it doesn't matter. So Mercedes comes out, and I'm an okay judge of character when it comes to people with facial recognition of people. Even with the sunglasses on, you could tell that she was literally came out and went, yep, I'm here for my paycheck. And she proceeds to go to the ring Now, mind you, I want to remind you that her personal writer quit WWE to go work for AEW to be her personal writer. Apparently this soap opera writer is going to make sure she has the greatest promos in the world. She's the Brian Gewirtz to her Dwayne Johnson. No, because like I said, she's a very sweet girl, but this is a very hollow promo. It was her talking about shit she's accomplished in bigger companies, bigger crowds that she has performed in front of in bigger companies. And some of it was just false. You know, she's like, you know, we're going to, AEW is going to start, is going to show the global revolution for women's wrestling. Rhea Ripley just main evented in Perth, Australia in a stadium. WWE has already done main event of WrestleMania being all women. You yourself were in night one main event of WrestleMania in front of 50,000 people. This company can't do that. And people want to claim, oh, well, no, because she's going to wrestle for Stardom and CMLL and blah, blah. That doesn't make it global. That doesn't make it global. You know why? Because WWE puts on shows in Mexico and Japan and other countries. Just because she's working for another company that if she does, because it's people are acting like this is a done deal. If she does, it doesn't matter. Because it's not AEW doing it. AEW runs in the United States and Canada and one fucking show a year in England right now. That's it. That's all they do. It's not, it's ridiculous. But she comes out and she plays the role of Jimmy Dugan. It's the same thing I said about CM Punk when he was there. And obviously CM Punk does it in WWE still now. So you can't say that I'm like siding with one company over another. It's I'm going to come out. I'm going to wave my little hat and smile and then go away. That's all it is. It's Jimmy Dugan is what it is. You don't like the reference. It's from A League of Their Own. Tom Hanks. But she cuts that promo and then is gone. Just walks off. Cold open. So then the opening match of big business, the opening match, the curtain jerker, if you will, is the world heavyweight title match. Why? There was a gimmick match with a stipulation of a title shot at the pay-per-view for this match. And in all honesty, if you have a gimmick match at one pay-per-view where you say this person becomes number one contender, and then you announce you're having another pay-per-view in less than a month, proper storytelling is you use those 4 weeks to build up that match. You don't give it away a week later on free TV. Especially when there's no sizzle to it, because this is a match that already happened numerous times for the secondary title, where Joe neutered Wardlow. If you don't recall, Wardlow, one of the falls, one of the many falls from grace Wardlow has was Joe chopping off his hair and making him look like roided up Ethan Page. So we get Joe versus Wardlow as our opening match. And honestly, I thought it was slow and plodding. I don't think it was that great. And then Joe chokes out Wardlow until ref stoppage. Good on making Wardlow a monster again. Real good. You know, that whole thing of making Wardlow the Batista of the Undisputed Kingdom. Motherfucker. Yeah, good on that. Like, number one, you made him henchman non gratis right from the beginning with that stupid ass stable. And then you tease the whole, oh, Wardlow's going to win the title for us. And then when Adam Cole is healed, he's going to hand over the belt to Adam Cole. So obviously everyone was going to be getting the vibes of Batista and Triple H, even though Wardlow is not Batista and Adam Cole will never be Triple H. But no, all of that squashed by choking out Wardlow and making him look like a bitch. What do you do with Wardlow from now? He has been built up so many times just to be crushed. Like, this is a dude who literally the night after he annihilated MJF to the point where MJF was carried out on a stretcher, the very next Dynamite, he should have been saying, I want the world title. And MJF should have stayed home for at least 3 weeks. But nope, they had MJF on the show and Wardlow was an afterthought. And from there on in, his time was up. Like, Wardlow needs to get out of that fucking company because he's never going to be anything big there now. Never. No matter how much they try, he is never going to be a force to be reckoned with in that company because of the poor booking of him. So then the next match we get is a six-man where we get Eddie Kingston, Penta, and a returning Pac versus the New Elite. Yeah, I just want to point out, remember Pac made his big return in this very building last time for Blood and Guts and then got injured right afterwards? Just keep that in mind. But once again, we know who's winning this match because we know the Bucks have creative control of their characters. We know they're trying to get over Okada as the next big heel. And we know that Penta is always persona non grata to do the job. Pac's just coming back and it's, you know, it's two thirds of Death Triangle. And you've got Kingston, who already was made to look like an idiot by taking the Rainmaker last week from Okada. And then you're going to do the six man. And I called it right from the beginning. I went, watch, Okada's going to pin Kingston. And sure enough, Okada pins Kingston. Because Okada did the I want a belt motion after he laid out Kingston, which I'm sorry. But if Okada is one of these game changers, if he's one of these new people that you are building your company around, why is he going for a low level title? I don't care what anyone wants to say about the Continental Crown being the new Triple Crown. The belt means less than nothing. When you're in a company where there's a world title, there's a secondary title in the TNT title, there's a tertiary title in the international title, and then there's the Continental Crown, which includes this belt that was just made up a couple of months ago, the New Japan Strong Belt, which is their developmental title for a developmental portion that is basically defunct now, and the Ring of Honor title, which Ring of Honor is a shell of what it once was and is a joke of a fucking company now because it's not a separate company. It's literally AEW Dark behind a paywall. So it's just three pieces of tin wrapped up to try to make it look like something important, and it's not. For fuck's sakes, what's really sad is fucking the FTW belt has a higher prestige than the Continental Crown. And I said it before, I know a lot of people are down on Eddie Kingston. I like Eddie as a person. I think he's got a great mind for this business. And he gets to work Japanese style now, so good for him. He's getting paid. But once again, they have Okada pin him, so it's like, okay, so Okada's going to go for Eddie Kingston for the Continental Crown. Why isn't Okada going for the world title? Why aren't we going to try to build Okada versus Joe or something like that? Or even the international title, for fuck's sake. Like, it's too many belts and there's just no meaning to any of them. But on top of that, they announced later on in the program that they're not even going to wait for the pay-per-view. Once again, they're going to hotshot it onto TV, and it's going to be Okada versus Kingston for just the Continental Championship, not the entire Triple Crown. So less than fucking 3 months after you created this triple crown, you are already splitting up the belts. I'm pretty sure, you know, because wasn't it Tony Khan? He's like, blah, 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 there hasn't been anything since the All Japan Triple Crown. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm pretty sure the All Japan Triple Crown is still a thing. But the AEW Triple Crown lasted 3 months. Why? Mark booking. That is why. Then we get Darby Allin versus Jay White. We have a visibly injured Darby facing Jay White that had no build. Like, literally, like, you could say, oh, no, they had a promo last week. The match was announced before that promo. The match was literally announced as during the media scrum of Revolution, as Tony Khan being like, oh, by the way, big business, we're going to do Darby Allin versus Jay White. Why? Because I want to. That was the reasoning. Because Tony Khan wanted to. And Darby gives this heartfelt promo about how, you know, it might be his last match ever because he's going to climb Mount Everest and he might not come back. Shut the fuck up. Mount Everest is, it's not 100 years ago. It's an expedition for rich assholes now. And I said that before, but I'll say it again. Everest is an expedition for rich assholes now. It's not a feat of will, iron will. It's something assholes do. That Adam Conover did an entire episode of Adam Ruins Everything about how Mount Everest is not a giant feat anymore and how it actually harms the ecosystem more than anything. But hey, no, you go do your thing, Darby. You be a daredevil. Fuck off. And leading into this, oh yeah, that's right. Jay White was technically a babyface with the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, but he cut a heel promo last week. And then they have the match this week where Jay White goes over. So, okay, yeah, Jay White gets a victory. Yay. Nobody cares. Jay White was another one of those game changers that everybody cooled off on because you stuck him with the Jokers and gave him the Ring of Honor 6-man titles. Like, belt means less than nothing. And then what happens? You have him at the end. You have him go full heel and try to take out Darby. And then here comes the Acclaimed, who we'll get to the Acclaimed afterwards. But here come the Acclaimed to, you know, get in their faces. And Billy Gunn gets in their faces. And then Jay White nails Billy Gunn at a chair shot, which he saw coming from a million miles away because he turned and looked right at him before Jay picked up the chair to swing. And the Bang Bang Scissor Gang is no more. Yay. So now we're going to have the Acclaimed feud with Jay and the Guns. Maybe to unify the trio's belts with the 6-man belts because both of them mean next to nothing. Which, whatever. But at the same time, I don't know if anybody has noticed this except me. But it's been 5 years. And it seems that Billy Gunn's kids are always involved in a program where their dad is either with them or on the other side of the ring from them. That's a problem because that shows that they can't handle shit on their own. They still need their hand held by their dad because they're not properly trained. They got in as a nepotism hire. I mean, The whole company is a nepotism hire because Tony Khan's a fucking nepo baby. But the Gun Club is just they should be slumming it on the indies and working their way up. They shouldn't be on national TV, being, you know, obviously having their hand held by their dad. So the next match we get is Hook and Chris Jericho versus the Gates of Agony. Why? Reasons. Because Jericho during the 8-man scramble said, oh, I saw something in Hook. And then he came to Hook's aid last week when Hook had a random ass match against Brian Cage for the FTW title, where afterwards the Gates of Agony came out and attacked him. So Jericho helped him out, and Jericho's doing the Lionheart thing again because he can't get over, because Jericho is a fucking joke, and they're calling themselves Lionhook. Fuck out of here with that nonsense. It's fucking terrible. And the Gates of Agony, it's like they got hired by Tony Khan as a favor to someone, and they're just there. Like, they you can tell that there's nothing about them. They're an indie team. And then afterwards, Jericho says, oh, yeah, next week I want to face Hook one-on-one. Yay. That's one. So then it takes us to our main event. Willow Nightingale versus Riho. Now, I've said many times, I am a staunch fan of Willow Nightingale. I think she has a bright future if she gets out of that fucking company. I think if she were to have 6 months of intense training at the PC, or even with someone like Rip Rogers, that she could be an absolute star. She has charisma. She has a great look. She has a great attitude. She's a good person. She should have never taken a contract from Tony Khan. I mean, get your money while you can. Get your money while you can. That's all I'm going to say. This match was not good. It was Willow carrying Riho. And Riho's supposed to be this time-traveled veteran from all over the place. And Willow was obviously doing all of the work in this match. You could see it. And shit like Riho giving Willow a Northern Light suplex makes no sense. It's indie-rific nonsense. That would be like Dom Mysterio giving Omos a Northern Light suplex. The size differential says no. That's how it is. But no one wants to hear that. Willow wins. She goes and gives Riho a hug. The lights go out. The lights come back on, and there's Julia Hart. Sky Blue attacks Willow. Here comes Mercedes Moné again. Lays out Sky Blue, lays out Julia Hart. Mind you, at the beginning, she said, Willow, you and I have unfinished business, because of when she got hurt during the New Japan Strong Women's Tournament. That was her own fault, but whatever. So it's like, oh, Tony Khan's going to go on that. But no, she saves Willow. So what was the point in that? But so we have this huge overrun. Like, the overrun kept going, and the overrun was literally just Mercedes standing in the ring doing a little dance. It was the most pointless overrun possible. Like, if you could have trimmed 30 seconds here, 45 seconds here, yada, 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 and you could have gone off the air at 10 p.m. with no overrun and gotten the same result. Instead, you paid for a fucking overrun of nothing. It was a pointless overrun. And so this is what we're to gather from this. Here is your big signee, much like you have Okada going after a title that means less than nothing. Mercedes Moné, your person who is getting paid an astronomical amount of money. I'm not going to speculate on how much, because a lot of numbers have been thrown out, but let's call a spade. This is Tony Khan. We know it's an astronomical amount of money because he throws money at people so that they won't go to the other company. She's getting an astronomical amount of money, and you are going to put her in contention with this fucking greenhorn who's 20 years old, who's still not TV ready, to go for the secondary women's championship. Why? Why is she not right away going, Timeless Toni Storm, I'm looking at you. You put Deonna Purrazzo, the botch factory from Impact, in that spot, but not the person you're paying millions of dollars to. Meanwhile, you have people with true talent like Taya Valkyrie slumming it on Ring of Honor as a fucking valet to her husband. There are so many things wrong with this fucking company. And it's just all there for everyone to see. So, we wait after the show goes off the air and everyone waits for 4 p.m. on Thursday afternoon, because that's when the numbers get released. And sure enough, here come the numbers. And Big Business did an average of 801,000 viewers. So some of you will say, well, that's up from 779 from the previous week. And the rest of you live in the real world and say, wasn't this supposed to be their big Hail Mary? Wasn't this supposed to be like when Punk came back? Or not when Punk came back, when Punk first signed? Surely they were going to get a million. Nope. Nope. And then we look at the quarter hour breakdowns. So everyone's like, well, see, she drew a million. No. The lead in from the Big Bang Theory, which always hovers around a million, was the lead in. Most weeks, it's a million. It's between 985,000 and a million is the lead in. So it really doesn't count. And then the moment she's gone, they lost 100,000 people. Your world champion lost 100,000 people. Couldn't even fucking hold to it. And then after that, you go to your game changer, your big other signee, Kazuchika Okada, and the fucking Young Bucks, who are ratings poison, and you lose another 85,000 people. But then it's not done. We go from there, and that match continues over, and people realize this match is still going, and they lose they lose another 78,000 people. So then we get to the 9 o'clock hour, and there's always a bump at 9 o'clock. There's always a bump. And we get the Will Ospreay interview, which I forgot to go over. And okay, the Will Ospreay interview bumped back up to 798. And yeah, let's talk about that, because I skimmed over that. I skimmed over that. So Will Ospreay said that he wants to face Bryan Danielson, because that's another dream match, because last week Danielson came out and they stood face to face. Fucking Will Ospreay is like, oh, fuck you, you're a rape apologist. And then he keeps talking about his match with Kenny Omega and the Tiger Driver 91. And Bob basically is implying that when he faces Danielson, he's going to execute that move. So all I'm asking is, what's going to happen when he fucks it up again and he drops Danielson on his head legit and Danielson is permanently injured? Where do we go from there? Where are going to be all the AEW apologists after that that says, oh, you see, WWE does as many botches, blah, 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 blah. Or Bryan Danielson's having the best run of his career. Or Will Ospreay is the greatest guy in the world. Someone is getting injured in that match. Danielson already got injured working Okada. Danielson just, he's the old war horse who doesn't want to be put out to pasture. And the problem is, he's not good at anything else. He's on the creative team for Collision, and he knows how to make matches. That's it. There's a big difference between making matches and being a booker and being a promoter. And I'm going to get into that in a little while. But so then we go and we've got the Jay White match that held steady at $7.99. But then we go into the Gates of Agony match with Jericho. Jericho loses everyone 60,000. But then we get Riho and Willow, the main event, and they lose almost another 100,000 people. I had people all over Twitter saying Riho is the GOAT and Riho is a proven draw and that Riho retains viewers. And then I said, what about this? And I literally get responses of, I'm not talking about ratings. I'm talking about graps, nerd. Really? You said she retained viewers. She didn't. There was no reason that match should have been in the main event. I mean, everyone's like, well, yeah, because it's to prove that women's wrestling is really taking blah, blah, blah. You want to put women's wrestling in the main event? That's fine. Why isn't your brand new shiny toy wrestling in the main event? Why is she cutting a Jimmy Dugan promo at the beginning of the show and then walking off and then coming out and doing a little dance at the end? That doesn't do anything. Why is she not there and saying, I'm calling out people on the first day, and have her call out someone who's been establishing themselves? Why didn't she have her say, I'm coming for the biggest and baddest, and I want to face Nyla Rose tonight? Sure, Nyla Rose ain't been on TV much, but we know Nyla Rose is a beast. And let's see how she fares. Something like that. You put her in action. Having someone just show up, this is what I love. This is one of the arguments. I'm jumping tangents around, but it's just something that I have to point out. People point out that they want to see wrestling on a show, that they don't want to see 18-minute long promos, and they paid to see wrestling. They didn't pay to people stand and talk in a ring. Yet people paid to see Mercedes Moné and Will Ospreay just stand and talk in a fucking ring. How's it different? How? Same fucking thing. Maybe if you would put them in a match, people might be fucking interested. It's not just to say, we're going to hear from blah, 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 and then being in a match when you're supposed to be the show with the most wrestling and how it's all matches and blah, blah, blah. But you got 10-minute promo segment here, 20-minute promo segment there, and these people don't wrestle. You can't have it both ways. Just like how someone complained that someone basically made the statement that you can't expect the ratings to be that high because it wasn't officially announced that she was there. It was all speculation. And I posed the question of, but it was all speculation of Punk showing up at the second episode of Rampage, the first dance. But that was still the highest rated episode of Rampage to date, where they got 1 million people. But it was all in speculation. So you can't have it both ways. And that is the story of the AEW fan cult. It's the statement that encapsulates the entire thing, is you can't have it both ways. So this is where I'm going to get into an addendum to this entire episode. Because I have a major problem with the just enjoy wrestling mentality. Because I've seen it said, and I've also seen some people who I consider close personal friends who are understanding something. I had a friend who actually posted something about, like, I don't understand why people can't just like what they want to like. Like, I don't play Final Fantasy, but other people do. And I don't go off on them about how much it sucks, yada, yada. That's a completely different animal. Here's the problem. Since the announcement of this company being formed, right from the get-go, they formed an us versus them mentality. Right out the gate, they were saying, we're going to take over the ratings. You had Chris Jericho saying, we're going to be beating Raw in the ratings within 6 months. You had them touting that they were beating the developmental brand on TV. They coined the term the Wednesday Night Wars. They pushed forward the narrative that NXT moved off of Wednesday nights because they couldn't handle it, even though when they originally filed the trademark for Dynamite, they filed the trademark for Tuesday nights, not Wednesday nights. But that all goes out the window. People want to say ratings are an archaic measurement, yada, yada, then stop bringing them up, because you can't bring them up when you do well and then ignore them when you don't do well. The key demo thing is bullshit. Here's why the key demo thing is bullshit. I mentioned how you need to look at the ads during the show in collaboration with the key demo. Here's what I'm talking about. This is something that Eric Bischoff has talked about a few times on Strictly Business. You need to look at the ads that happen during the commercial breaks. There are targeted ads and there are make goods. What a make good is when it's this company has paid for X amount of ad spaces on these networks and they get thrown wherever they get put in to fill empty spots. Look at the commercial content during AEW. You've got stuff for prescriptions. You've got stuff for home cleaning products. You have basic non-targeted ads. You're not seeing ads for Monster Energy. You're not seeing beer ads. You're not seeing ads for, you know, something. You'll see a video game ad once in a while. That's about as much of a targeted ad as you get. And here's the other problem, and it's something I mentioned on old episodes of White Heat. Look at the commercial breaks. Every time they go to a commercial break, the commercial breaks begin and end with a commercial for either an AEW program or a televised product that is on a WBD affiliate. What those spaces are unsold ad spaces. It's the same thing that Paul Heyman used to talk about with ECW, how TNN would never advertise their show, and the only time you saw commercials for ECW were during ECW. Granted, you'll see AEW commercials throughout the day during make good spots on daytime television on TBS and TNT. I've talked about that at length a long time. But during their own show, if you are seeing ads for Collision, for Rampage, for Dynamite, or you're seeing ads for Impractical Jokers or Stupid Pet Tricks or yada yada, those are ad spaces that did not sell. And it happens very often on Dynamite. Go ahead and count them. Count them. It's a minimum of 10 spots per show. You want to figure the average ad space time, 30-second spot on a, you know, on cable during prime time. The average ad spot goes for, let's be conservative and say $100,000. That's being very conservative. That's $1 million per episode in ad revenue they're not selling. That's $52 million a year. Think about that. So getting back into the whole, why can't I just like the blah, blah, blah. Here's the problem. The Just Enjoy wrestling crowd is, for the most part, is just enjoy what I like. Because there's people that only like WWE. That's fine. There's people that only like Japan. That's fine. But the problem is the people who come to bat for AEW and for Tony Khan, it is a cult mentality where anytime anybody says anything bad about AEW, they swarm on people. And they go off on them and they're like, you don't know what good wrestling is. What happened to Just Enjoy Wrestling? I myself have been a wrestling fan since I was 4 years old. I have been in the wrestling business for 20 years this November. And I can agree with a Just Enjoy Wrestling mentality for one solid reason. When I started in this business, and I was doing backstage vignettes, and I started doing commentary, I had to find the positives in everything that I did. I had to produce good backstage vignettes because my boss was busy booking the show. He just said, get as many backstage vignettes as you can, and trusted me and Cecil LaSalle to get them done. And so we tried to do what we could to get the most out of things. And then afterwards, we would be like, well, we can probably use that one. Well, that one sucked. But we would still review them and see, you know, and learn what we should do the next time. and how we should conduct the interviews to maybe get more out of it or whatever. It was a learning curve for the first few years. Doing commentary, I had to always find a positive in the matches I was calling. I had to put myself in the perspective of not only a professional calling the match, but as a fan trying to be excited about what I am seeing. That is a hard line to draw. If what you are watching sucks balls, you can't get involved. I can, and I'm telling you, I can recall two particular matches in my early years of doing commentary that were so god awful, and I could not get into it, and my commentary reflected it. To this day, I can remember those matches. They are etched into my fucking brain because of how boring they were. And the crowd saw it too. And that's why I am over analytical of every company that is on television. Anybody who knows me, anybody who's listened to a single episode of Way Heat, anyone who ever listened to a single episode of Full Circle Radio back in the day, you can still see all of them on this channel. The entire initial run, I have always scrutinized the televised wrestling product. I have always praised what I have liked and lambasted what I did not enjoy. And that's because I was trained to have the eye of a promoter. It is very different from an in-ring competitor. An in-ring competitor is able to tell a story during their match. And an in-ring competitor knows how to tell a story in a promo. But to be able to book a story, to construct a feud, and make sure that all the parts intertwine, and make sure you have absolute professionals working with you to make sure the overall product is enjoyable to your fan base, you're spinning a lot of plates. I'm my own worst critic. When we used to be, when we were still running shows before the downfall of my health, I was my own worst critic. We would go through a show, and then afterwards, Edward would turn to me and go, "That was a really good show." And I went, "Was it? I don't think the crowd was loud enough." I'm my own worst critic. How do I put this? I've always been extremely passionate about this business, and that's why I'm so scrutinous about it. And there's a lot of shit that I've had to deal with over the years. I worked under a man who was an evil genius when it came to creativity. He had it in him. And I always thought, am I ever going to live up to what he did? And I'd like to think that in some aspects I did. And am I saying I'm the end-all be-all at booking creative outlets? No, no. But I know that I can gauge what the crowd likes and what they don't like. And I'm talking the general audience, not the niche audience. Because, yeah, there's tons of people out there that like flips and like Japanese strong style and yada, yada, yada. That's not the bigger picture. And for anyone that wants to say, "Well, casuals are stupid, blah, 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 blah," I've been to many a WWE television episode, and they keep the crowd captivated for the whole time. And they do it without 1,001 flips. They do it without just people bleeding and people going through tables and people getting hit with foreign objects. It can be done. And the overlying part of that is, in order to succeed in this business, you need to make money. That's something no wrestling fan wants to hear. "Why do ratings matter? Why does this matter? Is this money going in your pocket?" No, but you need to realize something. If you love this company so much, Number one, you shouldn't be going off and telling people you're not a fucking wrestling fan if you don't like this. Have a dialogue with them. Ask them why they don't like it. See things from their perspective. Because if they don't like it, then they don't fucking like it. Nothing, no amount of you berating them is going to change that. What it's going to do is going to alienate your side even more. I will be completely honest to the core. Going in, I did not want to give AEW a chance from the beginning. Why? Because the Young Bucks tried to fuck me out of being in this business. When we first started White Heat, I refused to watch it. Brian would say, did you watch this? And I went, no! But after a while, it ended up being, well, you know something? I really shouldn't be speaking on this. I shouldn't have an opinion on this if I'm not actually seeing what's happening. So, for the good of being able to give an objective view on it, I started watching it. Will I pay for a pay-per-view or pay for a ticket? No. They will never get a dime from me in that aspect. Why? Because, once again, these people tried to drive me out of the fucking business. I'm not going to put a dime in their pocket. So I'll watch their televised product because it's already part of my cable package. So then I watch it, and I have been dead honest. If I don't like a match, I'm going to pull apart why I don't like a match. And that goes across the board. That has gone across the board for AEW, for Impact, for AAA, for Raw, for SmackDown, for NXT. Anyone who follows me on Twitter knows I have been the most scrutinous of NXT this past year. Because I'm sorry, guys, but as much as you want to claim NXT is great, it fucking sucks right now. It really fucking sucks. And I have given kudos to when there's a good match or a good segment. It is very few and far between. And it took a long ass time before I was able to say I finally saw a good match on Dynamite. And I can tell you exactly what that match was. It was Mark Briscoe versus Jay Lethal right after Jay Briscoe died. Why? Because they were two people with a history who knew how to work each other in the ring, who were good friends, and there was they went out there and they put on a match that wasn't insane, but it worked for the two of them, and because there was heart to it. There's no heart to AEW. There's matches for the sake of matches. And here's Ring of Honor, back in the day, people had a giant hard-on for old-school Ring of Honor. I'm talking like 2005, 2006 Ring of Honor, okay? Back then, Ring of Honor was a spot fest, too. There was the beginning of Ring of Honor, the Gabe Sapolsky years of Ring of Honor had something going where Gabe was trying to get these stories out of people, you know, the Punk Raven feud, shit like that. You know, that shit was good, but come 05 into 07, 08, when it became all about bringing over Japanese guys and having these no-selling matches, like that's when we used to joke that ROH stood for Ropes of Healing, because it was literally like, oh, I took 18 fucking pile drivers, but the second I bounce off the ropes, my power meter's back up to one. Like, and it wasn't until it wasn't until Cornette came and tried to bring it back down to a level of realism that Ring of Honor really started being watchable again. So I was, and my first Ring of Honor show that I went to, I fucking hated the whole show. I didn't enjoy a single fucking match on the show. And when I complained about it, I was told by all the fans that I don't know what real wrestling is. Which is funny because years later, when you mention that string of shows and I mention this show on this date in this town, people go, yeah, that wasn't that great of a show. But at the time when I said, I don't like this, I was attacked by what we called the robots, ROH bots. It's the same thing all over again. People want to say tribalism didn't exist before AEW versus WWE. No, tribalism fucking existed. Tribalism existed with Ring of Honor. Tribalism existed with TNA when TNA first decided to compete with WWE by going on to Spike. And then obviously with the Monday Night War and all that stuff, but there were tribalists for there. And I will tell you, there were tribalists on the indie level too. I will tell you back in, back in 2005, 2006, when DPW was trying to get things running again before we got our school and we were just running here and there, we had to deal with this company called MXW, which is being run by Joel Gertner. And we had these fucking MXW idiots trying to make it a tribalism thing, trying to say, you don't like real wrestling. If you go to see DPW, you have to come see MXW. It's the best wrestling in the state, yada, 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 to the point where they ran against us one day. And on their show, they had Christopher Daniels and Loki. They were supposed to face each other in the main event, but they went too long. So they ended up being a tag team and doing a run-in, which made no sense. But they ran the same night as us. And a lot of people did double shots. And that's a whole fucking rigmarole of everything. But you know something? They had TNA guys on their fucking roster. We had our same local fucking talent that we were using on a regular basis who were in cohesive stories at the time. And they drew the same size house as we did. And they were three towns over. They tried to split the state and they thought that we were going to be left in the dust, and we drew the same amount as them. They ended up going bankrupt after that show. I'm not giving ourselves a pat on the back on it. I'm just saying, you can't complain about tribalism when you're promoting it. And granted, yes, I know there are people out there that aren't promoting tribalism. I know there's people that are legitimately on the just enjoy wrestling kick, but they're few and far between. You can enjoy what you want, but don't proselytize about how what you like is better than what I like. Granted, okay, it may seem a bit hypocritical for me to say, well, because I criticize everything, but you know something? I've been in this business for half my life. I can point out what I like may not be always what the general public likes. However, I think I've got a good gauge of what the general public likes based on what I've booked and the reaction that has happened to it. And I know a lot of people say, well, why aren't you running shows still? There's reasons. Number one is because I don't want to put a financial burden on my financial partner when he already has a stake in another company that's still running shows. It's hard to run two companies at once, and I don't want to put that kind of pressure on Ed Wood. But also, being an indie promoter is a thankless job, because there's the indie promoters that are shitty to their talent, who don't pay them, who don't talk to them, who book a random ass show and people show up and that's it. Then there's indie promoters who try to make it more of a family oriented affair. And that's what I grew up in. You know, that's why, you know, that's how I was brought in. You know, nice guys finish last in this fucking business, and I'm living proof of it. You know, but that's why, like, when we hold the show, like, we make sure, not only do we make sure everyone gets paid, we make sure, you know, Shell cooks for everyone. You know, we make sure that everyone gets what they need. Because anyone can run a random show. It takes way more talent to be able to run a series of shows and have them link together in a cohesive way. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that claim that they'll help out, but when it comes to time to help out, they're not there. And so that means a lot of work would come on myself and two, maybe three other people. And when my health deteriorated and I lost my fucking leg and I was stuck on a fucking couch and I couldn't drive, guess what? I can't very well say we're going to run a show next month, because when I'm the only one going out there contacting local businesses about sponsorships, when I'm the only one putting up flyers, what's the point of putting on a show and no one's going to know about it? that's the way it is. Do I miss running shows? Absolutely. Am I saying I'm never running a show again? No, not at all. It'll happen again. But it's going to take a lot more than what I've able to offer right now. I'm still in a long-term recovery right now. It's a hard thing to deal with. And I'm not dropping all my problems on everyone and giving 1,000 excuses as to why Dissension Pro Wrestling hasn't run a show in a good long time. But it's because I don't want to half-ass it. I have come from a long line of half-assed promotions. I'm not saying, like, that came out wrong. But I've worked for a lot of promoters that didn't know how to promote. The one company that I was majorly ensconced in before we set out to revive DPW in its newer form after Mike Milano died, the interim company that I was with, NEFW, which became, well, you know, New England Frontier Wrestling, which became Revival Pro Wrestling, even though NEFW still kind of exists somewhere. That was one of the old, that was, I mean, I would do a spot show here and there, but that was the company that I kind of focused on. The guy who ran it, and I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but he really didn't know what he was doing. He would run a show at the Holyoke, at the Chicopee Boys and Girls Club. There would be over 500 people there. And at the end of the night, he'd be saying he didn't make any money. I'd be like, how is that possible? You've got a packed house. I mean, granted, yeah, you brought in one or two names, but you've got a packed house. And it's because he was too involved in being friends with the fans. And what I mean by that is he would do things that were detrimental to his business. He would do things like say, people who buy front row tickets get a swag bag and get in early and everything. It's like, you know something? If you can work that out, that's great. But when someone buys a front row ticket for $20 and then you give them a swag bag with $25 worth of shit in it, you're not doing it right. When I say, why are you booking this fucking person? They're not worth it. And be like, oh, well, it's because all these people requested, and come to find out it's because three people said, oh, I like this guy. No, that's not how you book that. It's, they weren't prepared to be a promoter. And I don't mean to speak ill, because he was a great guy, but he didn't know what he was doing. And what would happen was he would make random ass matches every month and then have me handle the PR. And I would have to come up with these weird examples of why this match is happening and write out a press release of why this is happening. One of the worst examples was we were running a show, one in Connecticut, one in Chicopee, that were 6 weeks apart, and someone retired on the show in Connecticut because he was on his retirement tour. He had his retirement match. I know, because I managed him in his retirement match. He gave his goodbye speech after the fucking match was done. And then he was booked for the next fucking show. And I had to come up with some cockamamie shit saying, oh, well, his contract technically stated that he still had one match, and because it happened in Massachusetts and not Connecticut, the governing board said that it stands. And it was stupid! Especially because it was putting a fucking four-way for a fucking title. It made no sense! But this is the kind of shit that I've had to deal with. And that's... I'm sorry, Eric, but that's indie mark booking. And that's what Tony Khan does, but he's doing it on a national scale. You're dealing with people who, a lot of them who never worked for WWE, have no experience with television wrestling. Granted, some people who worked for TNA did, but a good majority of them don't have experience with television wrestling. On top of that, you have a booker who thinks because he ran eFeds that he knows how to book a national television show, and he doesn't. They're like, oh, well, they've got a writer now that was on WWE. Yeah, and she's there to write Mercedes Moniz promos, and that's it. Plus, I'm sorry, but you can't have it both ways. You can't say, we don't want soap opera writers in AEW because it's real wrestling, and then, oh, well, this soap opera writer is going to change everything. You can't have it both ways. You can't. And then you have people like Will Washington, who got a job because he's Swerve's fucking cousin, knows nothing about the fucking wrestling business other than being a fan. Oh, well, he's on the creative team for Collision. Creative team for Collision. Will Washington, Dax Harwood, Bryan Danielson. Nobody knows how to be a promoter. Two of them know how to be wrestlers, and one knows how to be a mark. That's it. It doesn't fucking work. I would not have a single qualm about AEW other than two of the EVPs if this was run like a professional company, which it is not. And as someone who has been in the business for almost two fucking decades, it is an insult to me and everything that came before me. Call me a fucking old head, call me a fucking curmudgeon, call me whatever the fuck you will. I haven't done a lot in this fucking business, but I've made my mark just enough where I can fucking speak on that this is fucking insulting. And there is a reason why so many of these fucking retired fucking people who have podcasts now are saying the same thing. Granted, yo, a lot of them are like, I want AEW to succeed. You know something? No, that train's fucking passed. Tony Khan is a fucking billionaire baby who has had everything handed to him in his life, who throws temper tantrums on social media, who sits there scrolling through fucking Twitter when his fucking TV show is on instead of paying attention to what's going on, and who just thinks he can buy and sell people quite literally. This has passed. Tony Khan is no better than Dixie Carter. And he doesn't listen to anyone. It's like, oh, well, there's all these people there now. And he doesn't listen to a single one of them. He has final say on what goes on. He's like, okay, ROH gets booked by fucking Sean Dean and fucking Lee Moriarty. Why? Because they're there. You know, fucking, it's an insult to so many people. And yeah, it's like, well, all these WWE people are there because they're getting a giant fucking paycheck for it. I'm never going to deny someone to get a paycheck, but people say, well, what if Tony Khan called you tomorrow and offered you $5 million? You know something? That would be tempting, but at the end of the day, I still have my fucking pride. And I'm telling you right now, it wouldn't happen. Number one, because I'd get fired the first fucking day because the moment I come face to face with Matt and Nick Jackson, I'll go, remember me? Now you're about to lose a fight to a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. Because for no reason, they tried to ruin my fucking livelihood. Why? Because I had a different opinion of them than everyone else at the time. So listen to what I say. Don't listen to what I say. Take it with a grain of salt. Don't. But all I'm trying to say is, you know, the old adage that people say about, you know, about Christianity is like your dick, you know, as long as you keep it to yourself, everything's fine. The second you pull it out and start waving it around in front of people, we have a problem. Kind of the same thing with AEW. You want to be a fan of AEW? Fine. Fine. Don't tell me I'm wrong for not liking it. Same thing with every other MLW, TNA, WWE. Don't tell me I'm wrong for not liking something. And I won't tell you you're wrong for liking something if you don't, if it's an even exchange. If I come at you and say, this show sucked, and you come back and say, well, I enjoyed it, then it's an agree to disagree situation. Don't come back at me and say, you don't know what real wrestling is, or you're fucking stupid, or this, that, and the other thing. You need to learn the basis of agree to disagree. Don't come on here and say Tony Khan is the savior of wrestling, because he's not. That's a fucking fact. Business numbers are facts. You cannot say this is better wrestling when the ratings are what they are. Because like, well, I didn't know the ratings were what the ratings are, a reflection of how many people are watching. And if people are turning off the program because they don't like what they see, it is a reflection of the product as a whole. So once again, if you like it and you say, well, I liked it, let's agree to disagree. That is something you need to fucking embrace. You need to embrace agree to disagree. That is what being an adult is. Agree to disagree. The moment you come at me and say, I'm fucking wrong, and I don't know what real wrestling is, when I've actually taken a fucking bump, when I've actually ran the fucking ropes, when I've actually promoted fucking shows, when I've actually booked fucking talent, when I've actually analyzed fucking matches, when I have done commentary for fucking matches, and you have sat behind your fucking keyboard, sorry, you can't tell me you're an expert on something that I have spent half my life in. Agree to disagree is what you need to learn. If anyone ever comes at me on social media and I say, I did not like this, and someone says, well, I did, let's agree to disagree, that's when you'll have respect from me. Until that fucking happens, no, you're still a fucking child. Learn to be a fucking adult. And I think that's where we need to just finish up things. I think I've rambled for quite enough time. And I think I've gotten my point across. So for all of you listening, thank you for spending your time with me today, this evening, whenever you're watching this. Stay tuned to the channel. Like I said, other programs are coming soon. And once March is done, I will have Brian Katie back with me, and we will continue on with the regular episodes of White Heat. Until then, everyone, have yourselves a great day. Yeah, yo. Bitch, but I